A better work-life balance at the Postal Service will help the agency, its employees, and its customers. That's according to the agency's Inspector General, who has a plan now to introduce more workplace flexibility for Postal Service employees. John Pickett is senior economist for the Postal Service's Office of Inspector General and looking at the details on how to implement a new work-life balance plan. John, thanks for coming on the program this afternoon. I'll be clear, this is a suggestion, a recommendation, and not a plan that's ready for implementation or close to implementation. But I thank you for coming on to talk about it with me today. You and your colleagues write, the increased workplace flexibility, when properly implemented, can be the proverbial win-win-win. How do you get to that point where the agency, the employees, and the customers all win from this flexibility? Thanks for joining me today, John.
Well, thanks for having me. What we did was we went out and surveyed the academic literature, and we talked to innovative companies who use flexibility to attract and retain really good and engaged employees. And we think that same sort of model can be applied to the Postal Service. The idea being that employees and prospective employees value work-life balance as much or more than they value their pay level. And that's supported by research in the report. And so if you play to that that desire to have work-life balance, you can basically build a better workforce, retain top employees, and meet customer needs.
You have four high-level recommendations for the Postal Service to consider, John, and I would like to walk through each of them by turn. The first one is to create a strategic partnership for flexibility between labor and management. My understanding is, if I'm not mistaken, there are four primary unions that represent various levels of employees at the Postal Service. What's the situation now with the discussions about flexibility, or have those not yet begun because this work is just in the preliminary stages?
This is in the preliminary stages. There have been some steps taken, particularly recently, an agreement between the Postal Service and the American Postal Workers Union to offer what's called compressed work week to a small number of IT workers who are in that union. That's exactly the kind of thing we're talking about, but we're talking about doing it on a bigger scale, and we're talking about doing it at every level of the organization in a strategic way.
Is it your sense that the dialogue that the union and the Postal Service engaged in to get to that point was long, drawn out, contentious, or was it the opposite? Was it cordial, collegial, collaborative, and done in such a short order that it would be reasonable to scale that in the way that you'd like to see them do it?
I don't know how long it took them to get to an agreement, but I mean, it was pretty straightforward and pretty simple. Basically, you're going from a 5-day, 40-hour week to a 4-day, 40-hour week. My understanding is it was not contentious at all. There was an identified need, and the two parties got together and worked it out.
And then that's more, I guess, what I was getting at than the level of contention, was just the ease of which developing these agreements and these understandings of flexibility would be when they're going to be at a lot larger level than it sounds like the more limited scope of the one that you just mentioned.
Well, actually, the way we were thinking about it, that the second recommendation is to do pilot testing of exactly this sort. Identify needs at the local level, which might be different, say, in Iowa as opposed to Washington, D.C., and try them out. And if they work, you can replicate that in other areas where there's a similar need. So that's the kind of idea we're having. We're not talking about a grand change. We're talking about strategically applying these HR policies in where they can identify a need and where both the Postal Service and its employees and its customers will benefit.
So it sounds then, is it fair to say that you're proposing a kind of a network of changes that are instituted as appropriate rather than some grand rethinking and reshaping of a flexibility policy or strategy?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. The way we think about it is there's no one-size-fits-all solution in terms of these HR policies. What works, for example, a letter carrier might not work for an office worker. For example, an office worker can telecommute. A letter carrier obviously can't telecommute. He's got to deliver the mail. So you find those strategies that work in the right places and the right applications and try them out.
I will give a shout out to my carrier, Randolph, on my route in Gaithersburg, who telecommutes every single day, 6 days a week. Well, no, I think he takes 1 day a week off, but he telecommutes to my house every day, and I appreciate that very much. You mentioned the second of these recommendations is the piloting and evaluation of these initiatives. You also mention, you write here, it's equally important to evaluate the financial and psychological benefit of each pilot program at a few facilities, as well as the economic cost and benefit of not piloting the program. It strikes me that you really want to see apples to apples comparisons here and understand if we do this, we get this result. And if we don't do this in a similar environment, we get this result. Am I on track there?
Yes, you are. I mean, I come at this from an economics perspective, but a lot of our researchers came at it from, you know, psychological perspective and HR perspective. The way I look at this is, if you are in a labor market, a local labor market, where you're not offering these kinds of innovative HR policies, and you're, and the other side, the rest of the area is offering those policies, you might not even see the really good employees that you want to have applying for your vacancies. So it's important to keep that in mind, to keep an eye out for what you might be missing.
John Pickett's a senior economist at the Office of the Inspector General at the Postal Service. Is there a way to quantify those psychological benefits? Can they be evaluated in a way that you can measure them and say, we received this benefit when we did it this way, and we received less of this benefit when we did it the other way?
Yeah, well, I think the next recommendation gets to that point exactly, and that is, as you're doing this, these kinds of pilot tests, what you want to do is solicit feedback from both the employees, their supervisors, and find out, you know, what they're thinking as you go along. And that's that feedback should be solicited by an independent party, perhaps the OIG itself or some other independent party, so that it's neutral. And it's just honest, straightforward, objective feedback to find out, what's working? Is this stressing out employees instead of helping them, or you know, that kind of thing?
You write, there's great potential to reduce the costs and delays associated with unexpected workload. It's one of the pieces of information that you have under this recommendation, improving information on workload to reduce uncertainty. Do you have a sense of how precise you can make that information collection and distribution to assess the workload and assess the flow of that workload? Do you even know what you're able to know, I guess, is what I'm getting at?
Yeah, it's a really big problem. I mean, the Postal Service is a vast organization. It's operating 6 days a week, year-round. It's got 155 billion pieces of mail, and it's got all these programs for mailers for drop shipping mail to various locations. The trick is, if you get a better handle on when you're going to get surges of mail, when you're not going to get surges, when you're going to have, you know, troughs, I guess is a way to put it, then you can have a better idea of what your labor needs are going to be. And it's something that the Postal Service operations managers, you know, I've been in this business for over 30 years, they've been wanting better data and better analytics so that they can plan better for the whole time that I've been in this business.
The fourth recommendation that you make is to seek continuous feedback from employees. And it strikes me, John, that the most important element here has nothing to do with the workplace, has nothing to do with the Postal Service as an entity, but rather it has to do with the trust that the Postal Service has with its employees and that the employees have with the agency, because you suggest the Postal Service should employ an independent third party or request the Postal Service IG to conduct a transparent survey to establish the current level of satisfaction with flexibility among postal employees. If they don't trust that something good is going to happen with the information they provide, they're not likely to really respond or respond honestly. And that's not just the Postal Service. That's with any survey anywhere, is my understanding. Am I on target there?
You are. And that's why it's important for it to be a third party and for it to be transparent, so everybody can see what the results of the survey are. You know, you don't have to identify individuals, of course, but you can see what the results of the survey are, and you can understand that, you know, nobody's trying to game this one way or the other. We're just trying to understand what the status quo is and how it can be improved.